In the beginning was the Word. That's what we were looking at last week. In the beginning was the Word. And Jesus is there called the Word. That's the name for Jesus. He's called the Word because it's by words you get to know someone that you can't actually see. Might be by email, Facebook, or some people even write letters nowadays. But one way or another, if you can't see someone in person, then you get to know them by words. And no one has seen God. Let me jumping around here, verse 18. It says, well, no one has seen God at any time. And the one who shows us what God is like is Jesus. He is the Son of God. And he's closer to God than anyone. The Bible describes him as being in the bosom of the Father. So it says, no one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, that is Jesus, who is in the bosom of the Father, he can't be any closer to him than that. He has declared him. He's shown us what he's like. So Jesus is the Word, and he's the one that shows us a God that we cannot see. Now we know that Jesus lived on this earth 2,000 years ago, but who is he really? Because unfortunately lots of people relate to Jesus today just as a good buddy who's like their money, maybe a bit better. But Jesus is more than that, much more. If you don't know Jesus as much more than that, then you don't know the real Jesus. And so we saw last week who Jesus really is. We saw, going back to verse 1, we saw that he has always been there in the beginning. You go right back to the beginning, was the Word. And we saw that as someone who's been there from the beginning, he is God. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. And we saw also that as God he made all things. In verse 3, all things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. So there's three things that we learn about Jesus. He always has been there, he is God, and he made everything. And we also saw one thing that Jesus became. In verse 14, it says, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. We saw that last week. This is the greatest miracle in all the world, that this one who always has been, who is God, who made everything, he made you and me, this one who is uncreated, became something that is made. He became the same as you and me. He continues to be God, but 2,000 years ago, this one who is God also became fully human. And when a fantastic miracle like that happens, you've got to ask why. I mean, if you can hear that and not ask why, you haven't understood it. Someone who is God becomes man, your antenna go up and you think, why? Why did that? Why would this one who is the uncreated God do something as bizarre as also becoming a created human being? And partly the answer is in the fact that there was no better way for the unseen God to explain to us what he's like than coming in our form. So in verse 14, we see the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, which is the glory as the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. So when we see Jesus, we see what the Father is like. Jesus coming in human form is the best way to explain what God is like. And down in verse 18, no one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he's declared him, he showed us what he is like. So that's one reason why Jesus came in human form. But there is a more important reason than this. And that is that this is the way, the only way, God could give us life. Because that's what we're doing in this series on John. We're looking at how to find life, how to get a new life. That's why John wrote the book. You go down to John chapter 20, and the last verse in John chapter 20, and John says, look, this is why I wrote the book in the first place. Verse 31, he says, these are written, he said, look, this is why I wrote the book.
I wrote this that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name.
So John wrote this book so that we might get life, new life. And that's what John does. Again, go right back to the beginning of John, and right back in the beginning when he talks about in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God, he was in the beginning with God, all things were made through him, nothing was made apart from him. And then the very next verse, verse 4, he says, in him was life. And the life was the life of men. In him was life. In whom? In the Word. In Jesus. In Jesus, this life is to be found. And what is this life like? And here John uses another picture. He says, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. So he says this life is like light. I want to show you a picture, first one. First one. What do you think when you look at that picture? What do you reckon about this? Is actually a person. Maybe it's not that clear. What do you reckon about that person? How would you describe him? Yes, how would you describe him, Tara? That's not Jesus, no.
Person in darkness.
Person in darkness. Person who's in a lot of darkness. In fact, that picture was used to illustrate a sickness known as SAD, which stands for Seasonal Affective Disorder. SAD. It affects people when in winter time they don't get enough light. We were in the UK about some years ago now. And we were there in late autumn, coming into winter. And we would get up. We were on holidays. We would get up maybe around about 9 o'clock in the morning. That's when it got light. That's when we got up. And then we'd go out with Eileen's uncle and aunt. We'd be driving during the day. And then I'd be thinking, oh, okay, we'd better get home. It's getting dark. Must be around about tea time. Look at my watch. 3:30. You live like that for a few months on end and it starts to affect you. Because you need light. You need the sun. Let's have a look at the second picture. Everything needs the sun. Plants need the sun in order to grow. Have a think. What do you need, I mean apart from the sun, what do you need to keep you alive? Yes, Tara, what's one thing? You need water. Now, where do we get water from? You dig it from the tap, yeah, but eventually it comes from probably a dam somewhere, and the dam is fed by a river. Now, if you think about it, it comes from the river. Now, if you think about it, all that water in the river goes into the sea, and in the sea, you can't drink the water in the sea, can you, because it's salty. So some way the water has to get up from the sea, back into the mountains, and flow down the rivers. What is it that gets the water up from the sea to the mountains, back down to the rivers? Yes, Jesse. Right, and what heats it up?
The sun.
Sun. If you don't have sun, don't have water. What else do you need to live? Yes, thanks, Simeon.
Air.
You do need air. I can't help you with that one. Let's try something else. Jesse.
Food.
And where does food come from? Let's have a look at the next picture. Can come from plants. So plants can only grow if they get energy from the sun. No sun, plants die. Or you might eat meat. Meat comes from animals. Animals eat the plants. They don't get the plants. The animals die. You don't have any meat. So our food depends upon the energy from the sun. What else do we need? How'd you get here tonight? Well, I know how you got here, Jesse. You walked. How did you get here, Tara?
People sometimes eat animals.
They do. That is very true. But how did you get here tonight?
By a car.
by car and your car runs on. That's true, but the road requires bitumen, and bitumen eventually comes from, and also petrol, okay, comes from plants that live long ago that have decayed, or animals, I can't remember which, they decay, and of course those animals were only there because the sun came down and so on. So in the end, just about everything that keeps us alive depended upon the energy from the sun. Sun is light, and the light from the sun is life. In the beginning, God created that sun through his word, and so the life that we get through the sun originally comes from God. The light of the sun that God has given us gives us life. Okay, we'll leave the pictures there. We'll go back to John, because we can extend that, because there's more to life than physical life. Even more important than physical life is spiritual life. You not only have a body, you also have a spirit. Just as your body needs light and life in order to function as it's meant to, so your spirit needs spiritual life in order to function as it's meant to. When you die, your body is buried, decays. But your spirit will not die, it will continue, and so in that sense, it is far more important that we have what is necessary to nurture our spirits than what we have to nurture our bodies. Because your spirit will never die. It will certainly be very sick if you don't have spiritual life necessary to nurture it. In fact, worse than that, when you die, your spirit will go to either heaven or hell. There are only two places your spirit goes, either heaven or hell, when you die. And those with spiritual life that Jesus gives go to heaven. Those without that spiritual life go to hell. So it's pretty important that we get this right. Where Jesus says, or where John says, in him, in Jesus was life, and that life was the light of men, it's pretty important that we understand what this spiritual life is. It's pretty important that we understand how to get it. So what is this spiritual life? Get a bit of a clue if you go down to verse 18, where it says, "No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him." In other words, he's made him known. And this is tied up with having spiritual life. So we get a clue there that spiritual life has something to do with knowing God. And that is true. I want to jump ahead to John chapter 17, because there's a really important verse in John 17 and verse 3 that I really want us to think about, because it has a bearing on everything that we're going to be looking at in John. John 17 and verse 3, this is Jesus speaking. He says, "This is eternal life." So this is Jesus defining for us what eternal life is. He says, "This is eternal life, that they may know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom you have sent." Eternal life is to know God and to know Jesus Christ. If you know Jesus Christ, you know God. If you don't know Jesus Christ, you don't know God. That's basically what Jesus is saying there. That's what he's saying back there in John 1 verse 18, where he said, "No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he's the one who's shown us what he's like. He's the one who has caused us, who's helped us to know him." So it is vitally important when it comes to finding life that we know God, that we know Jesus Christ. Being a Christian is about knowing. It's not just about knowing something, it's about knowing someone. That someone is Jesus Christ, to know that someone is life. And what John tells us at the beginning of his book is this: most people don't know Jesus Christ. John 1 verse 5, back in John 1 and verse 5, he puts it this way, in fact the start of verse 4 there, it says, "In Jesus was life, and that life was the light of men. It says the light shines in the darkness and the darkness did not comprehend it. So John is describing this world here as darkness, the very opposite of light, and he's saying that without Jesus, you and I are in darkness. And even when the light of Jesus first comes, we don't understand it. We don't comprehend it. We don't understand this light that has come. Or we go down to verse 10, or verse 9, I'll do. Talking of Christ, it says, that was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world. And then it says, he was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. So when Jesus came to give light and spiritual light, the world didn't understand that. The world didn't know him. And even when he came to the Jews, they were his own people, and the Jews, if anyone, should have understood who Jesus is, because they had the Bible, and the Bible, God had been saying, look, this person is going to come and he's going to give you spiritual life. The Jews should have understood that, but in verse 11 it says, he came to his own and his own did not receive him. So you see the problem there. Jesus is the light. He alone can give spiritual life, but no one understands that. Being a Christian is about knowing. It's not just about knowing something, it's about knowing someone. That someone is Jesus Christ. Let's have a think about what that means. I want you to think of someone you know well. Maybe I'll just ask for a volunteer here. I want you to think of someone you know well, maybe more than better than anyone else. Now, before I ask you, these are the questions I'm going to ask you. Describe what he or she is like. How did you get to know him or her? What is it like to be with him or her? What experiences have contributed to your knowledge? And what emotions do you experience when you are with him or her? That's what I'm going to ask. Who's going to be brave enough to answer these questions? Or am I going to point out a volunteer? Chris. Yes, I'm going to go through. I want you to think about someone you know really well. It can be someone you care for more than anyone else, if you like. Okay, describe what he or she is like. Right, we need short answers here, if it's okay. So, how did you get to know her? I presume it is her. Good, thank you. What is it like to be with her? Thank you. And what experiences have contributed to your knowledge? Okay. So I presume you've sort of done things like travelled with her and been on holidays and worked and raised kids, and so lots of experiences there. What, now you can answer this one very discreetly, what emotions do you experience when you're with her? We can have the positive ones here. Okay. Thank you, Chris, for doing that. I appreciate that. You get the picture there that if you're going to know someone, there's a lot more than just looking up Wikipedia and saying, oh, boom, 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 boom. A lot of what Chris has been describing has been on the basis of experiencing interaction with that person. So basically that knowledge comes from relationship. I'm going to ask a Christian here now some similar questions, but this time about God. Now these are the questions I'm going to ask. Describe what God is like from your own personal experience or knowledge. What is it like to be conscious of spending time with God? What emotions do you experience in your relationship with God? Gavin, describe what God is like from your own personal knowledge and experience.
I'll stop you there, because obviously there's a lot more you could do here. Okay, the second question I want you to answer is this: what is it like to be conscious of spending time with God? So I'm thinking particularly of when you have your own reading and prayer time each day.
So what is it like?
What is it like to be conscious of spending time with God?
It's comforting. I feel privileged to be able to spend time with God, and it's time of uplifting, I guess, and where I'm stretched, challenged as well, and also. Especially, my eyes are opened to new possibilities because sometimes I get very focused and concentrated on the immediate surrounds. But
is that true? Would Tomoko support that? I'm supposed to.
Yeah. Right. Spending time with God really opens my eyes to other realities.
Okay. And the third question: what emotions do you experience in your relationship with God? You're a male, you have emotions.
Failure.
That's fair. That's fair.
When compared with God's standards, I do feel like a failure. But at the same time, I feel encouraged because He forgives me for my failings. And I'm thankful for that, so I feel thankful. I feel that God is trustworthy and there is a relationship of trust there, so I can trust Him in any situation that He will be true. And I feel that this is something that's come over the years. I feel victorious. I feel as though God has won for me already. And I'm just following. Along for the ride.
Good. Thank you very much, Gavin. Now, you'll appreciate that Chris described his relationship with someone that he loved. And it was obvious that it was more than just facts about that person. It was describing a relationship. Gavin then talked about his knowledge of God, and that was also more than just facts about a person. He was describing a relationship there. So, you see what we're getting at here. Knowing God, knowing Jesus Christ, is more than simply knowing about Him. It's about a relationship, and without that relationship, you don't know Him. So, question is, how can we have that relationship? Or let's say, how can that relationship be being? Because relationships are things that you build up over a lifetime. I mean, the person that Chris met, that he was describing, whoever that was, I mean, obviously his relationship with her is now vastly different from when he first met her. So what I'm going to talk about is, how does that relationship begin? I'm not talking about the whole thing, because that will keep on growing for the whole of your lifetime. Well, since knowing God this way through Jesus Christ is, as we've seen, what spiritual life is all about, because Jesus said, "This is eternal life, that they may know you, the Father, and Jesus Christ whom you have sent." He said, that is eternal life. And since that is so, then the question about how do we get this relationship and how do we get spiritual life are the same question. Now, we know that most people do not know God, because it says here, or don't know Jesus for that matter. He was in the world, Jesus was in the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own didn't receive him, so the world didn't know him, his own people didn't receive him. But then look at what comes next. We want 12 and 13 here. As many as received him, to them he gave the right to become the children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. So what it's saying there is that in order to enter into this relationship, the way it's put in verse 12 is you must receive Christ. That's the way it's put there. Or what is the same thing, you must believe in his name. As many as received him, to them he gave the right to become the children of God. To those who believe in his name, to receive Christ and to believe in his name are the same thing. They're just different ways of putting the same thing. Receive Christ. Believe in his name. That's where it all begins. That's where it has to begin. And that's not the whole of the relationship. As I noted before, relationships take a lifetime. But they have to begin somewhere. And that is where knowing God, knowing Jesus Christ begins. It begins with putting your faith, putting your trust in Jesus Christ. So you're to put your trust in this one that, as we saw last week, has always been there. He is the one who is God. He's the one who made everything. And he's the one who became one of us, like you and me. That's where it has to begin. And look at what it means. We'll wrap it up with this. In the long term, it will mean an ever-growing, ever-deepening relationship. Just like, when people get married, wedding day, the wedding day is great, but it's just the beginning, isn't it? Unfortunately, when marriages don't progress beyond the wedding day, people keep looking back to the wedding day and they think, well, if only we were back there, if only we were back there. But when you're progressing in a relationship, when you've been married 20, 30, 40 years, you don't want to be back there. You want to be enjoying the richness of the relationship that's been going on ever since. But there are some things that will mean right away. One of those things is in verse 12. To as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become the children of God. To those who believe in his name. Children of God. I mean, imagine that. The Son of God became like us. When we put our trust in the Son of God, we become like him. We become a child of God. And verse 13. Who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. That's describing something radical that God does within us. We get a whole new nature. The Bible describes it as being born of God. It's not something you inherit. You can't get it from your parents. Your parents can't make it happen, because it says not of blood. In other words, not because you have a blood relationship with someone. And it's not something that you can make happen just because you want it, because it says not of the will of the flesh. And it's not something that someone else can make happen for you by their own choice, because it says not by the will of man. This is a miracle that only God can make happen. Receive Christ, believe in him, and you're adopted as a child of God,
God gives you a whole new nature, and a whole new relationship begins, which is life, which is what John's all about.